Bienvenidos, amigos y amigas. This is Sexto Sol on 90.1 FM KPFT in Houston. I am your host, Ernesto Aguilar, and tonight we are going to introduce a new monthly installment to the program, Radio Copwatch. Radio Copwatch is going to be on the last Tuesday of every month to cover police issues and the community. Why Radio Copwatch? Here's an important statistic. 79 people have been shot by the Hura in 1997 to 2001. Half of those were Latinos. We're talking 32% of the county population, which are Latino, but over 50% of those who have been shot by the police. Pedro Aragon is not the only one. We have gente from Galveston, Baytown, Houston, Richmond, A-Leaf, and varios all over who are being profiled, photographed, and mistreated. And this does not stop until we start to speak out. Therefore, we have introduced a brand new segment of this show called Radio Copwatch. We have guests in the studio this evening. Your mics are on. Let's introduce yourselves, please.
My name is David Stiles.
I'm Kevin Spring.
And I'm Diane Bossom.
Great. We're going to crank you all up a little bit. And what this segment is going to do is we're going to be talking about different police issues going on in the community. We invite each and every one of you who are in the listening audience this evening to give us a call, 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. We're going to be talking about a number of issues. We've had a huge number of issues, actually, that have happened over the last few weeks, and we want to go ahead and dialogue about those. We want to invite you in on that community dialogue. We're going to take one really quick music break, a brand new song from George Fontanopoulos. It is called Copwatch, and it's definitely worth checking out. Stay tuned, and we will be right back.
Pay attention, people. There's a war here in our streets. Take a stand for one another. It's time to move our feet. It's time to stand together now. Take back our civil rights somehow. Excessive use of force, brutality. Not our sole intention here to disrespect the law. We're well aware of the job you do, protect and serve us all. But sometimes when the heat is on, compassion turns to earth and stone. Violence in our streets won't be condoned. Hey, Mr. Policeman, be careful what you do. Hey, Mr. Policeman, we've got our sights on you. Hey, Mr. Policeman, we men in blue. Hey, Mr. Policeman, our job is watching you. Justice, freedom, civil rights are all on stage today. Excessive force and violence needs to end here right away. With notebooks, pens, and megaphones, cameras, radios, and telephones, we're taking notes on what you coppers do. Hey, Mr. Policeman, be careful what you do. Hey, Mr. Policeman, we've got our sights on you. Hey, Mr. Policeman, we need the men in blue. Hey, Mr. Policeman, our job is watching you. Hey, Mr. Policeman, our job is watching you.
You know, when I first heard that, I was actually a little speechless, and I'm still a little bit speechless. That is George Fontanopoulos with Copwatch, a brand new song that is on this program as we start off Radio Copwatch, which is going to be a monthly installment of Sexto Sol. Of course, you can hear the show every Tuesday night at midnight, but we are adding a new segment, Radio Copwatch, which will be addressing police issues at the last Tuesday of every month, where you've got a packed studio officially. We've got more people who've popped on in. Can we go ahead and do introductions one more time for everybody?
Hi, I'm Larry Boozer.
I'm Andy Shelton.
I'm David Stiles.
Hi, I'm Kevin Spring.
I'm Diane Bossom.
Lovely thing, lovely thing. Well, we're going to have a really big community dialogue with a lot of people who are in the studio. We, of course, invite you to get involved in this discussion, 713-526-5738, 713-526-5738. KPFT. Now, last Monday was the one-year anniversary of the murder of Luis Torres in Baytown. And despite protests and media coverage and even a videotape that shows Torres being killed, the Baytown cops who killed him still got off. And I guess this is a question to everybody who's in this dialogue. Now, Cop Watch has been an advocate of taping police, but I think the Torres case shows that just having a tape doesn't really necessarily mean anything, meaning these cops may not go to jail no matter what the tape shows. How do people feel about the aftermath of the Torres case? And what do you think about the process in terms of videotaping and its relevance to trying to document what the police do in the community? Anybody?
Well, I think the videotaping is very important because, first of all, you have to have proof of the abuse. And there's really nothing better than a videotape. For the longest time, police have been very successful at having people believe whatever they say, even if there is evidence. One famous case in point would be the Rodney King beating. The four officers were acquitted, and there was a videotape of the beating. Oftentimes, people are confused as to what constitutes a beating. Well, I think it's fairly obvious when you see this tape, just as when you see the Rodney King tape.
Diane, what's your take on this issue?
Well, I feel that no attention at all would have come to this case without the video. So even though there wasn't an outcome that included indicting these officers, at least we got the attention. Maybe the next time the videotape will make the difference and the officers will be indicted. We have to keep videotaping.
Indeed, indeed. Now, last week we also had another pretty significant case that a lot of people have been following. That's Trinh Pham's case. Trinh Pham is the youth who was shot in front of the Spy Club a few weeks back by a constable. Now, there was a return on ballistics tests in that case. The constable killed Mr. Pham, claiming that he had shot an individual and was about to fire on officers. The friends of Mr. Pham claimed that he actually wrestled the gun away from the assailant, and the cops killed the wrong person, basically. Now, the police defended themselves in the media and whatnot, and they said these tests, the ballistic tests, would prove them right. And in fact, these tests' inconclusive findings could easily be seen as lending weight to the witnesses' statements that he had taken the gun away from another person. Now, how do you feel this case played out before the media and the public? And do you think that the tests had a role in supporting or dispelling what the police said? David, I know that you had some thoughts about this before we went on the air.
Yes, it seems pretty simple to me. The HPD crime lab released inconclusive evidence as to whether Trinh Pham had a gun or fired a gun. It seems as though inconclusive evidence could support the fact that he didn't have a gun, or rather, he didn't fire a gun. But one thing that's left out, that's, you know, sometimes mentioned in the media reports, is that he was shot in the back. Now, if he was shot in the back, how did they know he had a gun?
Very, very interesting case in general. Larry, I know that you've had some thoughts about this as well. Before we went on the air, we've talked about this case before. How do you feel this got played out in the media, just generally? I know there was a lot made about Trinh supposedly being this gang member who was drinking and all this other nonsense, honestly.
Well, yeah, once it started getting out in the news, well, the first reports coming out of the police department was that he was drunk and that there were a lot of gang tattoos, and not to mention just all these talk about, you know, the gang activity and things like that, that friends and family say wasn't there. I mean, the kid bought his own shrimp boat that he worked with his father from sunup to sunset. I mean, I don't know how much time you have in the day to participate in gang activity when you're out shrimping, but that's a hard job. That's not, doesn't give you much time to get out on the streets. Also, there was a witness to this case that was a victim of a drive-by shooting like the 18th, just a couple of days after, disputing the police accounts of the shooting, which struck me as rather odd, timing-wise, anyway. I mean, why would anybody be shooting up somebody's house at just this particular time after they've been saying that the police are lying about what happened at in front of the nightclub. It's just fishy.
Indeed, and speaking of this whole issue of testing and forensics and whatnot, there was actually a comment that the state auditors had this past week as well, where they basically slammed the Houston Police Department's crime lab, basically failing them in virtually every category from cleanliness to record keeping. Why is something like a crime lab important? Why is this whole issue of forensics and such important in regard to the issue of policing, do you think?
Well, I think, you know, it shows where their priorities are and where they put things. They, you know, get their own police officers off the hooks on their own crimes that they commit while they arrest anyone blatantly and just put it through the crime lab that it isn't even seem fit to put someone in jail for.
And David, also, what do you think about this?
Well, the question is, how do we address this problem if the crime lab is so terrible? I mean, it is part of a systemic kind of problem all the way down the line, and this is just the part where the case is analyzed in a lab for evidence. Very often they return evidence that's inconclusive. Now, that may be because they're not very good at their job, or they don't have enough funding, or whatever it is. But, frankly, I wonder what the crime lab is doing there, if not just some sort of paper-pushing institution to support whatever the police line is.
One thing that's really scary to think about as well is that I think that while it's not necessarily intended, juries and the public in general tends to give a lot of weight to findings of the police. They tend to assume that this information is very correct and this information is something that we can basically stake people's lives on because that's what we're doing right now. And when you have a case where individuals aren't keeping basic records or scratching out things or not writing things down, if your facility is dirty and you can't even keep your samples and your forensics to even a barely manageable level, that seems to put a real crack in the foundation of what we assume is the public trust. What do you think about this whole situation, Diane, in terms of forensics?
Well, you know, bottom line is that's where their evidence is taken. That's where it's studied. That's where the reports come from. And if the testing is faulty and the reports are faulty, then the system is faulty. You know, if I was having medical tests run in a lab such as this, I would be really upset at the results I was getting, and I'd be wondering if they were correct or not. There are a lot of things depend on these lab tests, so they need to get up to snuff.
And they've been releasing men from death row on a regular basis for a few years now because of DNA evidence. And, I mean, when it comes to a point where DNA evidence might be contaminated to the point where not only are you convicting someone of a crime they didn't commit, you might be releasing someone for a crime that they did commit. It works both ways when you've got contaminated evidence. And when you've got a department that's running a slipshod manner, you're going to have contaminated evidence. It just goes without question.
You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT in Houston. Sexto Sol is the program. This is a special monthly installment of Sexto Sol called Radio Copwatch. We are talking about policing issues, and we invite you to give us a call for this community dialogue about policing, some of the issues that have come up. We're definitely going to get into some other things that have come up. Today we had more fallout from this Kmart raids. We've also had the whole thing of Chief C.O. Bradford's trial that has come up. Give us a call, 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. Now, Andy wanted to say something on this. He's sitting right beside me and wanted to make some comments on this whole issue of forensics.
I just wanted to add that a lot of the times when Internal Affairs investigates issues, they will just go straight to the information gathered by the forensic labs as opposed to going out and re-examining the issue. And so if they're flawed to begin with, the evidence will continue to be flawed throughout. Just a minor point I want to add.
Absolutely. So absolutely. Let's go ahead and take a short music break. We're going to go ahead and play a little bit of Propaganda. And again, we welcome you to give us a call here at 713-526-5738. 713-526-KPFT. Our next topic is going to be on the Bradford trial, as well as more aftermath from the Kmart raids. But we want you to stay tuned. Sexto Sol, Radio Copwatch on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. Stay tuned.
Homophobes, Aryan nations and hammer skins. You wear my nuts on your Nazi chins. I love a man in uniform. And just what exactly are the great historical accomplishments of your race that make you proud to be white? Capitalism, slavery, genocide, sitcoms. This is your fucking white history, my friend. So why don't we start making a history worth being proud of and start fighting a real fucking enemy? Swastikas and Klan robes. Sexist, racist, homophobes. This one's for the master race. My brown power ass in your white power face. Kill them all and let a Norse god sort them out.
Little bit of sarcasm from Propaganda. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT in Houston. Sexto Sol Radio Copwatch is our special segment this evening. We have a bevy of guests in the studio, members of Houston Copwatch, to talk about some of the policing issues that have been happening all around this city and all over this community. 713-526-5738 is our number if you'd like to get involved in this conversation. Chances are, if you're listening to this station, you probably have an opinion about how policing is being conducted in your community. So we definitely want to go ahead and get your perspectives. Now, this past weekend, we had a national conference here in Houston. The October 22nd Coalition met in Houston, Texas. This coalition is best known for a yearly day of protest against police brutality. But what is also growing is a larger anti-police brutality movement nationally. Diane, you were involved in some organizing around this October 22nd conference. How did it go, and what kinds of things do you think were most well learned out of that entire event?
Yes, we had a conference on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday this weekend, and we had activists and family members from all over this country who came to Houston to discuss the severe issue of police brutality. We probably had upwards of 70 people attending at various different times. The October 22nd Coalition is... Well, there's a core group of members, and then there are a lot of other groups that participate in this. And one of the major things that came out of this and was the focus was the second volume of the Stolen Lives Project. And that is a book that was published, which includes over 2,000 names of victims of police violence and people who died in police custody. Since that book has been released in 99, there are almost 2,000 more cases to be documented. So there will be a second volume added to this. It's a tremendous amount of work in this, and we need to have a lot of input on this so we can get names of people in other areas of the country that don't have active 022 members in it. It's just... The amount of death is just horrendous. The family members have been just terrorized. There are some that have been sued for calling the cops murderers. There are children that have been killed by the police officers. Their families are involved. So this is just a huge group of people from all over the country involved in this issue.
Now, how many October 22nd chapters are there? And is there a website or a place where people can check out more information about the organization?
Yes, it's october22.org. And that's the website. There are quite a few chapters. There are over 60 chapters that I know of, and maybe even more than that. And on October 22nd of every year, they get together in each location and have protest rallies, marches, speakers, you name it, whatever they can come up with to address this issue and bring it to the public's attention.
Now, Larry, I understand you got a chance to attend the event as well. What do you think you learned most out of the event?
It's kind of hard to say because being the host of the event, we didn't really get a chance to participate in the event itself that much. But mainly what I got out of it was basically the grassroots movements need to be kept going some way or another. There's especially groups like this. October 22nd is really a group for victims. It's for families. But most families aren't activists. Most families have never been involved in doing any kind of political activism. So it's very important that there are people that aren't experienced with political activism in there to show them the ropes. Once you get family members out there on the streets, they're some of the most valuable activists you can get a hold of. It's just a matter of getting them trained and getting them to know what to do. But that's basically what I got out of it. Like I said, I didn't get a chance to do much to partake too much of the convention, the conference itself, because we were too busy feeding people and God knows activists eat like locusts when they're busy. And it was basically just the idea of organization, getting people organized and getting people radicalized and getting them out in the streets.
Can either of you give some information about the local October 22nd, when it meets, contact information and such?
The local October 22nd coalition? Diane, can you talk about the local?
Our local group is pretty strong. We've been here for 6 years. I've been part of it for almost three. We need a lot of help. We need a lot of people to step forward to help out on a year-round basis. That's part of what we're doing as COPWatch. Is we're trying to be proactive in COPWatch, whereas the October 22nd coalition is more of a reactive sort of group. So we just all need to step forward on this issue. The more we speak out, the more likely this case, like Luis Torres, where there was a videotape and the coroner did say that it was homicide, and yet the people who killed him were not charged with the murder. The more of us that get out there and speak about it through whatever means, October 22nd Coalition, COPWatch, or whatever, we just all need to be out there speaking about this.
Absolutely. And all the groups play a role. I mean, this is a broad movement, and we all need to be united. Some groups are protest-oriented, some are grassroots-oriented, but all of them, I think, definitely serve a really important purpose, and that is to expose the types of issues that we've been seeing with the Torres case, and hopefully to prevent another Torres case, and prevent another Pedro Aragon, or prevent another Jose Campos Torres. So we want to go ahead and get involved and hopefully prevent those types of cases. Now I want to go ahead and pause for a second and hit on a topic that I want to hear everybody's perspective on, and that is the trial of C.O. Bradford, which just ended just a few days ago. Chief Bradford is, of course, the chief of the Houston Police Department. He had a trial on perjury charges, and a lot of people criticized this case as being politically motivated, as some have even said that there are white officers that get away with insulting people all the time using curse words, which is what Bradford is said to have done. And this is primarily a politically motivated case, has been the big criticism. Now, what's also been intriguing about this entire case is that there was a comparison that came out in the Chronicle, I believe John Williams wrote it, mentioning the Christian activist Stephen Hotze, who's very, very connected with the Republican Party here in Houston, in what seemed to be a pretty obvious DWI case, recently got no-billed by a grand jury, while Bradford faced a trial. I want to hear what people's take in the room is about the Bradford trial, and I guess I want to get Larry's perspective particularly, because you were one of the people who brought up this whole issue of Hotze and kind of where it stands in terms of both politics and race and all these other types of issues.
Well, I'm not sure if it's as much about the Bradford trial or as it is about the Hotze non-trial. The case is there. It's at least there for enough to at least bring it to jury, bring it to a trial, or bring it to some charges or something for the Hotze case. I've always been puzzled by the Bradford trial. It came up at a very odd time, right about the same time that Aguilar was being strung up for the Kmart debacle, and just the timing always seemed wrong. First he's being tried for perjury, and then all of a sudden Hoxha is not being tried for drunk driving, and it's all coming to the same prosecutor, and it's just it stinks, in my opinion.
No doubt. Kevin, I know you were talking about following this case a little bit. What did you think about it when Bradford's case came up in the media?
Well, I just thought it was kind of silly that he was being charged for perjury for I think cursing another officer, and he probably didn't even realize that he did. I mean, you watch the cops TV show and you'll hear the bleeps while they're arresting somebody.
Indeed.
Well, I have a little different perspective on it. You see, this trial with Bradford, for the longest time there wasn't a trial, right? So it's just a distraction from the fact that police are murdering people and getting away with it. Now, as commander-in-chief of these armed forces, he is responsible for what his soldiers do. So, you see, trying him for cursing at one of his subordinates is completely beside the point. I would even go so far as to say I don't care that he cursed at one of his subordinates. He should be a little nicer about it and everything. But the real issue is that his forces are murdering people, and he's not being tried for that.
Absolutely. I guess my perspective on this whole thing is that it's easy to go ahead and want to do basically what amounts to a show trial about something as innocuous as cursing when we've got officers who shot Pedro Aragon 9 times in the back who are still on the force. We have officers in Baytown who are still on the force who killed him very obviously. And in the case of an officer like Bert Dillo, or actually charged in other abuse cases, and they're still on the force, and yet the Justice Department and FBI and whatnot don't want to be involved in these cases. To me, this seems like a pretty minor type of issue versus all the other topics that could be addressed by the district attorney. It seems extremely politically motivated, considering this district attorney has prosecuted, I think, one officer has actually faced any kind of punitive measure, and that was Alex Gonzalez in 1989. He was one of the officers who was drunk and chased down Idalee Delaney and killed her, and he got 2 years probation. So it's pretty sad, Kay. I mean, it's a pretty sad state of affairs just generally. Diane, what did you think about the Bradford case in terms of how this played out before the public?
Well, I don't know. My take on it is, if he will commit perjury about cursing, well, what else is he not telling us? What else might he be committing perjury on? This is just really a weird situation with our police chief being indicted for perjury. There are so many more issues that need to be addressed than this.
Andy, what's your take on this whole Bradford case? We've been kind of been doing a bit of a roundtable here, and I know a lot of people have been a little bit perplexed by this whole thing. How did you feel about Bradford and this whole issue of swearing at officers and whatnot?
I haven't followed this story very much, but while I was listening to y'all talk, I was wondering about the judge that cursed at the inmate and called him an N-word. Is he still working for Harris County? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, he is, as a matter of fact. All right. Matt Zepeda,
yeah.
He is.
So if he's allowed to do that, out any sort of public reaction at all, then I guess Bradford cursing at a subordinate is not, nearly as important to the Houstonians. I don't know.
Absolutely. Would be my opinion on it as well. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT in Houston. This is Radio Copwatch, an installment of Sexto Sol. We do this every month to talk about policing issues in the community, recent topics that have come up, and to give you an opportunity to dialogue with us about what can be done, changes that can be made, and just the topics of the day. We have quite a bit to talk about in regard to policing in Houston. We'll go ahead and take a really quick music break, and then we will be back to talk about, dun-dun-dun, the Kmart raid and the recent resignation by one of the officers and what is probably going to be the firing of another in regard to that case. So we want to go ahead and, of course, invite you to get involved in this discussion. 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. We will be right back.
We're going downtown, gonna beat up drunks. You're to the drive, I'll bring the beer. It's a late, late shift, no one to fear. And ride, ride, I'll ride. And ride, you ride. It's a round of time with a good horse. Me, we're gonna drive one screaming off the street. And ride, ride, I'll ride. Uniform and a silver badge. Play cops for real and play cops for pay. Let's ride, you dress is a kick in the ass. Let's reach your balloon till you shit in your pants. No mood, child, got a big black stick. There's six of us, babe, so suck on my dick. And ride, ride, I'll ride. Let's ride, you ride. The left newspapers might ride a bit, but the guys at the station, they don't give a shit. Dispatch calls, are you doing something wicked? No sorry, Jack, we're just giving tickets. Let's ride. Bust him off the-
everyone DG. But just cause me a black man, them want check me. Them check out me dark or it shine like the sun. But them jealous of them next guy, them can't afford one. Black people still slaves up to today. But the black police officer, let's see it that way. He want his salary, he want it. So he put on a badge and kill people fake.
Little KRS-One on Sexto Sol Radio Capwatch is our installment this evening. Did Kennedy's just before that. I'm your host, Ernesto Aguilar, and we have in the studio a load of guests to talk about policing issues here in Houston. We welcome you to get involved in this community dialogue. Give us a call, 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. Before I go any further, I want to go ahead and remind you that we have a KPFT pledge drive coming up in February. You will be asked to support this program and support your community radio station. Please make sure to make your pledge and fulfill that pledge because we depend on your support. I want to go ahead and get everybody's opinion this evening on the aftermath of the Kmart raid for those who might have been hiding under a rock over the last few months. In August, there was a raid by the Houston Police Department under the auspices of stopping drag racing. Roughly 300 people were arrested, and the resulting controversy and scandal from that has prompted a number of officers to be on the hot seat in a number of respects. Sergeant Ken Wenzel, who is one of the 13 officers suspended with pay over the August 18th raid, resigned today, which I guess was Tuesday. Today, I guess, is Wednesday, but regardless, resigned on Tuesday, hours before he was supposed to meet with Tim Ottmeyer, who is the acting police chief. Mark Aguirre, who was at his hearing today, was told that a decision will be made in the next few days on whether he will keep his job at all. Aguirre and Wenzel were indicted last month on 5 counts each of official oppression for the raid, and 13 police officers were suspended with pay. In this particular case, no charges were filed against 11 other officers who were implicated in this incident. This thing's a big mess. It really is. There's just no other way around it. There's no way to put a happy face on this at all because I think the public's trust in the police is severely damaged. Obviously, there was a lot of corruption in regard to putting up trespassing signs and all these other issues. David, you have been talking about this off the air previously. I know you've got some opinions on this whole Kmart issue. What's your take on Wenzel's resignation? What are your thoughts on the prospects for Mark Aguirre keeping his job? And what do you think this means for the city generally?
Well, I've heard that Mark Aguirre, you know, all the police officers he works with seem to like him all right. The thing is, what really gets me is I'm glad when an officer resigns when they've done something wrong. That's what they should do if they're not fired. But suspended with pay? Is that like a paid vacation?
That's what it is.
Okay, yeah, I just had to make sure that so suspended with pay is supposed to be some sort of punitive damage, right? Yeah, exactly. It sounds like you know, they're so anxious to get on the street and beat us down that being suspended with pay is just horrible. Yeah, I can't imagine. I wish that would happen to me at my job.
Yeah, waking up at noon and enjoying cartoons all day long. It can't be a bad existence, I'll tell you. Kevin, what are your thoughts on Kmart raid?
Well, they're saying that it was trying to get rid of the drag racing in West Timer, but I think the just traffic police were doing fine doing that. They kept pushing him out toward Fort Bend, but you know, they're getting rid of them out of the Westheimer. But just swarming on Kmart and Sonic and arresting hundreds of people is just insane. And I think this was the first time that many cases have been dropped in one single time.
And it speaks a lot to the criminalization of youth, because I think everybody's assumed to be this wild drag racer who's tearing down, slamming kids with their cars and whatever else, and just kind of assuming that everybody there is an automatic criminal. It really, really is. And I guess the city is now looking into trying to expunge everybody's records, because I think the media really brought out that just because people's charges are dropped doesn't mean these arrests are off their records. Now, I know, Diane, you said you actually were down in that region just after the raid had happened and got a chance to talk to people who had been picked up in that incident. Am I correct on that?
Yeah, I went down there a couple of times and talked to victims. I talked to witnesses. I talked to management of some of the businesses in that parking lot, and according to their statements, there wasn't that much problem with drag racers. HPD bought signs and placed them out around the property that day, and they said no trespassing. The businesses did not put those signs out. HPD did. They showed up with huge vans. They showed up with a lot of plastic handcuffs to do mass arrests. They came fully intending to do what they did, it looks like. I spoke to people who said that they pulled guns on people in their cars and cursed them and told them to get out. So anything Bradford said, you know, these guys were saying to these innocent victims sitting at Sonic, you know, eating dinner. There was a 10-year-old child that went to the bathroom, and when she came out, she was taken away and arrested, separated from her father. She didn't know what was going on. Witnesses told me this little girl was just crying and crying, and they would not let the father and daughter get back together. They separated her and off to the side and separated him to another area. It was just tremendous what came down that night. You know, hundreds of people were arrested, and we taxpayers have to pay for these lawsuits now.
Well, I'd just like to add, I'd just like to point out that Diane went and talked to the people at these businesses and asked them, was there a problem before this raid? Was there a problem with all the drag racing? And they really didn't speak to there being a problem. It's proof that a citizen can go out there and find out the truth. Because what we've been told is that by the police said, well, the reason we conducted this raid is because all the businesses around there were complaining about the drag racing. Well, one of us went out there and found out that that's not true. So I wonder what else they're lying about.
This kind of speaks to this whole issue that I brought up on the air before, this evolution of truth in terms of police stories. You get things like the Pham case, where nobody really knows what exactly happened with this individual, but, oh, he's a gang member and he's drunk and whatever else. Another case in point is the whole issue of Benjamin Boatman, who was killed just before Christmas by a police officer engaging in a high-speed chase. The evening of that case, the officer was chasing someone. By the morning, Benjamin Boatman was dead and nobody was being chased at all. It was an accident. So this Kmart issue is by no means something that anybody should be surprised about, in my opinion. It really isn't. Andy, why do you think that the police didn't get away with potentially just arresting 300 or close to 300 people and it being swept out under the rug with everybody getting tickets and citations and city making a probably a hefty profit off of it?
Well, taken individually, there is nothing unique about any of those arrests. Those arrests happen all the time in the city of Houston. Young people out late, particularly young people of color out late, in nice cars are going to be stopped by police and they're going to be hassled. And really, I think the only reason that this one showed up was A, because of the numbers that they arrested, and because they weren't getting everyone they arrested was not a poor person. And some of them had well-to-do parents, and those parents had lawyers, and so it made it to the news, and there were problems in the courts afterwards that made them face up to this problem, my opinion.
Larry, what are your thoughts on this issue?
Well, the first thing that ran through my mind when we started talking about it was that if it weren't for the fact that the massive arrests at the Kmart raid, we probably would have never heard about the mini Kmart that took place 2 weeks earlier, run by the same people at the Coney Island, James Coney Island, just down the street. I mean, the same kind of tactics, basically stopping people as they were leaving a parking lot, you know, not for any kind of crimes they're committing, just for being in one place at a certain time and just happening to be there. And next thing you know, you've got people being arrested for being somewhere.
Was it attempted trespass they were getting arrested for, I think?
I think that's what they gave them. But again, you're attempting to trespass in a parking lot of a public place that is open and doing business. You're leaving a James Coney Island where you've just eaten something, and you get arrested for it. They're out of control.
Generally, there's a request to leave the premises if there's trespassing. These people were not even asked to leave. They were just immediately arrested. They were surrounded. The entry and exit points were blocked off. There was a man sitting at a red light turning out of the parking lot. He was taken out of his car, slammed on the hood, and arrested. I mean, they weren't given a chance to leave. They were just surrounded and arrested en masse.
And it makes me wonder just, you know, how many times does this happen? If the Kmart raid led to the discovery of the James Coney Island raid 2 weeks before, which was much smaller but still just as stupid, how often does this happen in neighborhoods where people don't have lawyers can't afford lawyers to speak up for them and everything? They tend to concentrate on lower income neighborhoods, people without a voice, because they don't want to people to hear what they're doing to them. And I'm just wondering just how often things like this happen.
Andy did bring up a very good point that this isn't unusual. This happens quite a bit to young people who are pulled over and may not be aware of what their rights are and just kind of assume this is the way the system works. And they really don't have a say in it. And unfortunately, I think that just the fact that there were so many numbers involved in this particular case really was a determining factor as to whether it actually was something that it got swept under the rug or whether people began to speak out about it, unfortunately. But it does happen way too frequently. It really, really does.
Well, there's an interesting correlation I've thought of, is that they went out and they arrested almost 300 people in search of the elusive drag racer, because drag racing is so dangerous and it involves innocent bystanders, innocent victims in other cars. But yet, they justify high-speed chases over the guise of going after a burglary suspect. People get killed. They shoot people. Isn't that dangerous just as well to go out on a high-speed chase? I think I'd rather take on the drag racers. They don't have guns.
Indeed. I read a really interesting statistic today that said something to the effect of 80% of the high-speed chases that go on, according to a University of North Carolina study, they looked at high-speed chases all over the country, and about 80% of them are over traffic violations. People who don't have a light on, people who go through a red light, people who change lanes erratically or whatever else. And it's the big story that you always hear about these chases is that, well, we've got to stop criminals, or what if someone is running away from a crime scene? More often than not, that's not the case at all. It turns out an officer decides they want to chase someone down over something that's fairly minor.
Well, when you consider if the police have your license number, they know where you live. All they have to do is go to your house and pick you up there. There really is no excuse for 85% of these car chases. People run away from the police for the stupidest reasons. If you've seen an episode of Cops on Fox, you've seen somebody run from the cops because he was afraid he might have had a warrant out. And the cop looks up, well, you didn't have any warrants, but guess what? You're a felon now because you ran from the police. I mean, they run in for the stupidest reasons. And yeah, them and the cops are putting people's lives in danger. And if the cops were to back off and let them just drive home and follow them home and pick them up there, it'd be a lot safer for everybody, in my humble opinion.
Yeah, I think the police have the same thoughts as like a few local talk show hosts here in Houston, that, you know, anybody that runs from the law is considered guilty and they should be shot
up to something
just for running from the law.
I guess they don't consider the fact that, you know, most people are afraid of someone who carries a weapon and can shoot to kill without any sort of recourse, no sort of accountability. People out here are afraid. I talk to people every day, all day long, that are afraid of the police. And they have no reason to be. They have no criminal record. They have no criminal background. But just the smallest interactions can lead to death. Most people say, you know, everything was fine until I called the police. And that's when it went crazy and things started happening and somebody died.
Very, very scary out there in the streets today. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT in Houston, Radio Cop Watch. On Sexto Sol, we have a number of guests with Houston Cop Watch. You can get more information about Houston Cop Watch by going to the website www.houstoncopwatch.org. We're going to go ahead and take our final music break of the evening and then come back to talk about a very interesting topic, the State of the Union Address, how that relates to quote-unquote homeland security, policing, the Patriot Act, and civil liberties in general. I know we all have opinions in this room about that entire topic, and I'm sure those of you who are listening probably have some opinions as well. We are in the last 10 minutes, but if you'd like to jump into the conversation, give us a call, 713-526-5738. That's 713-526-KPFT. Stay tuned, and we will be right back.
La policía te está extorsionando, dinero. Pero ellos viven de lo que tú estás pagando. Y si te tratan como a un delincuente, ladrón, no es tu culpa. Dale gracias al regente. Hay que arrancar el problema de raíz, uh-huh, y cambiar al gobierno de nuestro país. A la gente que está en la burocracia, a esa gente que le gustan las migajas. Yo por eso me quejo y me quejo, porque aquí es donde vivo y yo ya no soy un pendejo que no guachas los puestos del gobierno. Hay personas que se están enriqueciendo,
gente que vive en la pobreza. Nadie hace nada porque nadie le interesa. La gente de arriba te detesta. Hay más gente que quiere que caigan sus cabezas. Si le das más poder al poder, más duro te van a venir a coger.
Porque fuimos potencia mundial.
Dame, dame, dame todo el power para que te demos en la madre. Gimme, 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 gimme todo el poder so I can come around to joder. Dame, 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 dame todo el power para que te demos en la madre. Gimme, 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 gimme todo el poder so I can come around to joder.
Dame, 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 dame todo el poder. Dame, 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 dame todo el power.
Porque no nacimos donde no hay que comer. No hay por qué preguntarnos cómo le vamos a hacer. Si nos pintan como unos huevones, no lo somos.
¡Viva México, cabrones!
Que se sienta el power mexicano. Que se sienta todos juntos como hermanos. Porque somos más, jalamos más parejo. Porque estar siguiendo a una bola de pendejos que nos llevan por donde les conviene. Y es nuestro sudor lo que los mantiene. Los mantiene comiendo pan caliente. Este pan es el pan de nuestra gente.
Dame todo el power.
¡Viva México, cabrones!
Phil Molotov on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. You are listening to Sexto Sol. Radio Capwatch is our special segment. We're going to be doing this each and every month, last Tuesday of the month, talking about different policing issues in Houston and Harris County. We have got apparently a caller on line one. Caller, you on the line?
Yes, this is Bob.
Hey, Bob, how are you doing?
I'm doing real good. Enjoy you guys' show. And just want to kick a couple of ideas around. One is maybe have more people call in instead of playing songs. Enjoy the music, though.
Good deal.
But another one is you said a minute ago we're going to talk about this homeland issue. And, man, if people will show up to these peace rallies, you know, if they're listening to KPFT, find out where they're at and show up, just, you know, and if it happens in every city, man, and everybody goes to the streets, people have got to notice, even if it's just the people driving by and honking, you know.
Indeed. Yeah, support anywhere, it helps a lot. Certainly,
I mean,
so.
If you just show up for 30 minutes and leave, you know, if you can pay for the whole rally, that's great, but just make a showing.
Absolutely.
And one other quick thing, and then I'll hang up. Y'all can talk about it if you want to. What do you think about this deal with Standing Deer?
Absolutely. We actually dedicated the song at the very beginning of the show to Standing Deer, and that's certainly something we want to talk about as well.
Okay. Well, I didn't catch the beginning of the show, but I'll hang up and listen to the end of it.
Good deal. Thanks a lot for calling in, Bob.
Thank you.
Take care. I know several of you are familiar with the case of Standing Deer Wilson, who died last week. He died on Monday evening, and apparently the individual who killed him admitted to it on Tuesday or Wednesday. So I know some of us knew him. I knew him for a good 10 years or so, and I know several of others of us also had met him and talked to him in different capacities. What did people think about Standing Deer? Diane, I know that you had actually brought the CD in that we played at the very beginning of the show to dedicate to Standing Deer. How do you feel about the impact that he had on with you? I know you talked to him a number of occasions.
We have suffered a great loss in this community, in this world, from losing Standing Deer. All I can say is when we had the October 22nd Coalition rally, it was raining, the weather was nasty, and I looked up, and here he was walking up the sidewalk, and I ran to him to hug him, and he says, "It won't rain anymore. It's stopped now." And do you know that the sun broke out, the skies opened, and we had no more rain? This man was just a tremendous spirit. He was a tremendous activist. He was... I don't have the words to describe how I felt about him. The loss is just heartbreaking. And I know so many people are affected by the loss of Standing Deer. I hope that his murderer is brought to justice. I hope there's a resolution to this.
It's a really sad case. It really, really is. I knew Standing Deer starting around 1990. And one of the things that I think that he contributed was just a sense of compassion and a sense of himself. It was a very, very difficult loss, I think, for a lot of people. Very shocking and very, very disappointing, and hopefully we will find some resolution to this issue. We're running into the last few minutes of the show, last 2-3 minutes of the show. I just want to go ahead and give a roundtable discussion real quick. A few words on what people thought of the State of the Union address and kind of this whole issue of Homeland Security. Some people may be aware that John Cornyn, who is our new Texas Republican state senator, as actually head of the Committee on Constitutional and Civil Liberties Issues, which is kind of scary because he's actually endorsed several police officers who've been kind of questionable. The Tulia raid in Tulia, Texas, he endorsed some officers involved in that whole incident and whatnot. What do people think about this whole issue of Homeland Security in the State of the Union address?
Well, honestly, I didn't listen to the State of the Union address. Personally, I can't even hear W speak, but I'll get information on it later. But you brought up Cornyn being he's been appointed to the Committee on the Constitution. He's in charge of laws relating to the Bill of Rights now. Kind of unprecedented that a freshman congressman senator is appointed to the head of a committee. It's that for one thing is unprecedented. What else is unprecedented is such an enemy of the Constitution has been appointed to the head of that committee. He not only supported bills for the banning of the burning of the flag, for the an amendment in the Constitution. He's also the Attorney General of Texas during the Tulia raids, and presented the cop that was responsible for that with the Lawman of the Year award. I just really don't have many words to say. It's a shock. The Constitution is in a great deal of trouble.
Indeed. Final 30 seconds. Who's got a comment on this State of the Union?
Well, I remember when I was reading my history textbook, I remember one of the things that the National Socialist Party did in Germany before World War II is they began to consolidate many of the bureaucracies under one bureaucracy. And that seems to be what we're headed into doing now. Not only that, the government has started appointing people that are just not qualified to speak on things such as the Constitution.
Indeed, indeed. And that wraps it up for the first installment of Radio Cop Watch. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT in Houston. Stay tuned. Stacey Davis is up next. And thank you very, very much for tuning in. Stay tuned next week.